with Stuart Pink and Mark Searby.
Film reviews and movie news.
Yes, it is. It's film reviews and movie news with me, Stuart Pink, and he's watched so many horror movies now. The only thing that really scares him at Halloween is the thought of not having a pumpkin spice latte. It's Mark Searby.
Thank you. No, I'm not a fan of them.
Are you not?
No, I'm not.
Oh.
No.
Neither am I. No. But I thought you would be, because you love everything at Halloween.
No, hot chocolate, that's about it. But no, I'm not into those. No. The only thing that scares me is not having a horror movie to watch on Halloween.
That would be terrifying.
That's the thing, you say. Yeah.
Has it ever happened? You run out yet?
No, but I'm now of this thing. I've been doing this for about 5 or 6 years now of watching a classic horror movie that I've never seen before. I'm not talking something from like the 70s or the 80s or the 90s. You know what? I'm talking about 50s, 40s, 30s, silent era, something like that. Something that I've not seen. So, I basically that is my yearly, I was going to say treat. It's not a treat, is it really?
Is it a trick?
Yearly. Oh. Yes, it's my yearly trick. My yearly viewing experience.
That's a cool idea, though. Discover some really old school stuff that
this is the thing. You know, a lot of people who I know, a lot of film critics who I know, do cover horror exclusively. And, you know, they see a lot of horror movies and they put reviews out and I just say, it's a new stuff. But occasionally when something gets re-released, I'm like, oh, that kind of looks interesting. So that's what I kind of do. You know, I just to widen the net a little bit more, just to find something that I've not seen and watch it. And thing is, most of these movies are under 90 minutes as well. So I normally fit in 2 or 3.
Oh, yeah. Does a little marathon.
Which is great, you know.
I bet you found some that are like shades of newer films that people hadn't realised were copying.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, look, me and you have spoken at length about how most films now rip off Hitchcock. And Hitchcock was making horror
all
films
the time.
But then Hitchcock was, you know, he'd been ripping off other movies as well back in then. I mean, a lot of movies now are starting to understand German expressionism in terms of horror movies. So if you look back at like Nosferatu or The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, a lot of them are using that sort of thing. Guillermo del Toro works very well in German expressionist cinema as well. Getting really nerdy here. I'm sorry about this. Really nerdy.
That's right. It was haunting me a little that I didn't understand.
Maybe
names.
We'll talk a bit more about it off air. But yeah. So that's what I do basically on Halloween. I don't really watch a new one. I always try and watch a really old one. Oh. And the good thing is TV are always showing a really old horror movie on, you know, some obscure channel. So you can always dig something out.
It's always something. That's very cultured. I tend to carve a face in a pumpkin. Stick a tea light in.
Yeah, but the thing is, you don't like horror movies, do you? You don't like horror movies.
No, we've spoken before. I think probably, Shaun of the Dead is about as scary as it goes.
That's right. That's it. Well, in which case, let's lead me on to the first movie to review this week, because I think you'll be fine with this.
Yeah, okay.
I really do. So
broaden the horizon.
Well, not so much that. I think you'll be okay. So in cinemas and on Netflix now is Wendell and Wild. It's about two scheming demon brothers called Wendell and Wild who enlist the aid of a 13-year-old called Cat Elliot to summon them to the land of the living.
Oh, that sounds scary.
Yeah, so before I talk about the horror element and everything else, let me just say this. I have been so excited for this movie. So excited for it because it's the return of the stop motion king to filmmaking, Henry Selick, the man who directed Nightmare Before Christmas and Coraline and a few others that James and the Giant Peach, yes, as well. You know, here's a man who has not made a movie in 13 years.
Cool.
He's back.
He's had
back.
That long old break, isn't he? good to he have has, him
back. Unfortunately, he was making a movie and the studio pulled the plug on it. So I think that set him back quite a bit. Yeah. So now he's joined up with comedians Keegan-Michael Key and Jordan Peele for an adaptation of Clay McLeod Chapman's book called Wendell and Wilde.
Oh, yeah.
The thing is with this is it is, as to be expected, if Henry Selick is involved, a spooky affair. The animation, as to be expected, is amazing. The look of it all is just gorgeous. And so, some of the actual characters look incredible, considering they're all done with stop-motion models. I mean, you only have to look at the opening scene on the funfair on Buffalo Bells's belly. Genuinely, that's where the funfair is. It's on the demon's belly. To see how incredible and how intricate Henry Selick and his filmmakers just take their work. You know, they do it. There's so minute detail. It's amazing. I mean, I love all of the animation in the demon realm in this. I thought it stood out brilliantly. The above ground animation is still great. And now, obviously, while I don't think it's got the sort of the rough charm of Nightmare Before Christmas or Coraline, technology has moved on. You know, they have spoken about the fact that they're now using 3D printers instead of actually sculpting the clay.
Oh, or, you know, whatever that's interesting.
Yeah, but it means that they can quickly print off a new face and they can change it and whatever else. Look, all of it looks fantastic. All of it looks fantastic.
Yeah, from what I saw in the trailer, I agree. Looks very cool.
Yeah, it is. It's just really cool to look at. The story itself, it's fun, it's entertaining, it's got a heartfelt message at the centre of it about, you know, 13-year-old trying to find themselves and also never trusting strangers, especially if they're from hell. Don't trust them if they're from hell.
Good advice.
Exactly. My only problem with the film, actually, is that I felt like there was a bit too many stories going off all at once. Like, there's a plot about a corporation trying to build a prison in a rundown town. It's kind of strangely out of place and bizarrely political in a movie that I don't think needed it, really. There's a story of Kat trying to bring her parents back from the dead. There's a couple of other loose stories as well, which I kind of felt, it made the film a bit too stuffed with ideas and plot points and never really focused on the main three characters, half of them much as I think it should have done. You know, a little bit too overblown with narrative ideas.
Yeah. Is that because maybe it was in the book and he's trying to bring it all in? Often there's a lot in the book, isn't there?
Yes, you could well be right. That's the thing. I mean, I haven't read the book, so you could well be right in that they went, right, let's get everything in there, absolutely everything.
Sometimes you need to drop a few
things. Could be the fact, it could be the fact that, you know, the book is 100 and something pages, I don't know, and it spreads it out nicely. With this, it was a little bit too jammed. But look, let me say this. I'm saying that, but Wendell and Wilde are really great characters. I mean, I laughed a lot at them.
Yeah.
I just thought they were really funny. It helps when you've got two comedians voicing them, let's be honest.
Oh, definitely.
And they are great comedians as well. You know, also I've got to mention as well, going back to the animation, I love the animation on Wendell and Wilde and how it changes depending on if they're in hell or on Earth. So it changes completely, and you go, wow, this looks completely different. I really like that. I like the two characters themselves. I really like Kat Elliott as well, the 13-year-old girl. She's really forthright. She's a very strong young woman, even for her young years. I liked all of that in her. I thought she'd got a lot of attitude. I was like, yes, this is great, fantastic. So, you know, look, as I said, the film might be bloated with story ideas, a bit too many, maybe. I think it's still an entertaining movie. It is a genuine privilege to see Henry Selick back directing stop motion work because, well, he's the master at it. I'm sorry, people are going to say Aardman. I'm sorry, but no, Henry Selick is the master.
Yeah.
He really is. You know, this is a guy who has worked his entire life in stop motion.
Nice.
And has, for let's say about 90% of it, because we'll take out Monkey Bone, succeeded. So it's just a privilege to see him back working again because he's been away too long. And I think this is a nice introduction back to him and a spooky treat for I would say the whole family. This is why I was saying to you, I think you would be okay with it. I mean, you've seen the trailer. You'd be all right with it, wouldn't you?
It looked fairly creepy, but I thought it's obviously because of the animation element, fun and quirky as well. So
it is very similar to Selleck's other work, Nightmare Before Christmas, Coraline. I mean, James and the Giant Peach, even is a little bit spooky.
I still remember that being pretty scary, yeah.
Exactly. So I think this one veers more towards it being spooky than scary. I think it works very well.
Excellent. You mentioned Aardman, in your sum up there. Do you reckon, Wallace and Gromit, Curse of the Were-Rabbit is another option, of course, for Halloween. Does this top it?
No, because Curse of the Were-Rabbit is the best film Aardman have ever made.
Yeah.
They will never top that, to be honest with you. And I will hands down tell you that that's their best movie and I love it. So will it top that? Wendell and Wilde doesn't. Nightmare Before Christmas does. Then obviously factor into Laika Studios, who do stop motion, you know, Coraline, obviously, and their Paranorman, Box Trolls. I mean, basically, if you like Wendell and Wilde, just go and see the majority of Laika Studios' output over the past 15 years, because that's what they do as well. And Curse of the Were-Rabbit as well, obviously.
Excellent. So this is Wendell and Wilde.
It's in select cinemas and on Netflix now, so you can see it on Netflix.
Excellent. Whole family. Let's get spooky.
Yes.
Best enjoy with the pumpkin spice latte.
Yeah, possibly. If you enjoy them, then yes, you would. Yes, absolutely.
Or hot chocolate, absolutely. If you like us. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Excellent. Summit for the adults. What we got next? I'm scared already.
Yeah. 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 You're going to need it. You're going to need it. So for the first time ever on Blu-ray, we have Ghost Watch. Now, instantly, that word will conjure up something in a generation's minds that maybe they don't want to talk about. Halloween night, 1992, a date etched in millions of people's minds. That was the night that, let's be honest here, an entire generation, my generation, was scared witless. That was the night Ghostwatch aired on BBC One.
Oh.
And
I was only two, so I don't remember it, but I have Googled
You're it. Lucky. You're lucky. You're lucky. Everybody's got their own story about watching this, okay? If you speak to somebody about Ghostwatch, everybody will have their story about it. So me, much like most people, I missed the start of it. I was at a friend's birthday party. We were watching a film and the film was boring, so we turned it off. So we missed the first 15 minutes. And then we started to get into it. And from then on, the silence started to fill the room. Now, bearing in mind, this was a friend's 12th birthday party. It was a room full of young lads, you know.
My God.
So to keep them silent.
Yeah, that's no would have,
that,
easy
exactly,
task.
Exactly. And I think by the end of that 90 minutes, all of us was afraid to go into the next room where the light wasn't on.
Oh my God.
You know, so that's my story without going too much into depth. I mean, so much
not
has been
sleep
said.
Done on that sleepover then. In the
absolutely
end.
Not. Absolutely not. I mean, so much has been said and written in the years since. I mean, the most interesting thing here is that BBC have never repeated Ghostwatch. Ever.
I'm not surprised. Would you want to host it? My God.
Here's the thing, is that it's such an iconic piece of horror making.
Yeah.
Film, TV, whatever you want to call it. It's just incredible they've never repeated it, even on BBC Three or BBC Four or something like that. So that's why I'm saying Blu-ray for the first time ever, and we can all scare ourselves silly all over again. Of course, the question now is, how does it hold up a few decades later by today's horror film standards? And the answer is, it does a very good job of scaring still. You've got this very clever use of outside broadcast, which clearly is based on the Enfield Poltergeist true story, if you believe in ghosts. And then you have this inside broadcast featuring the ever reliable Michael Parkinson and Mike Green as well. However, for all of the fakeness, it's only when things start to go bump in the night that this film, TV program, whatever you want to call it, brings the scares still to this game. I mean, the brief glimpses of the ghost, and I'm not going to mention his name because it's going to make loads of people shudder in fear, really. Then you've got the flashes in the cameras, which is clearly taken from The Exorcist.
Yeah.
Then you've got the strange noises. I mean, the guttural growl will haunt me forever, to be honest. So while the fashion and the presenting might feel dated, trust me, the rest of it doesn't. It still plays absolutely brilliantly. And by the panic-stricken, all-hell-breaks-loose finale, it is genuinely still all bets are off. So, as I said, it might be 30 years later, but I think this still has the power to scare. I think it is my generation's version of Orson Welles's War of the Worlds radio address. You know, many, yes. many people didn't know that was real and freaked out. The same with this. Many of us, I include myself in this, didn't know it was real because we'd missed the start. We didn't know that it was a drama. We didn't know it was pre-recorded. We didn't know any of that at all. And we just came to it and we were hooked and we were and still are haunted by this film, TV program, whatever you want to call it. You know, it's a one-off. So I'm going to say this. It's one of the all-time great BBC productions and it is still one of the best film, TV programs, whatever you want to call it, ever made. And it's a precursor to all of these reality horror TV programs and films.
Yeah. I was going to bring some of those in because there are loads on sort of other channels now, aren't they? Where they go,
yeah,
and they've got like a green night vision camera, and they go, yeah. Oh, what's that? I can hear something.
Well, I mean, you watch Ghostwatch and you go, well, this is Most Haunted or it's Ghost Adventures. Ghostwatch was doing it before them. That's the thing. But Ghostwatch isn't real, or apparently it's not.
allegedly.
Yeah, allegedly. You know, you think about found footage movies. Ghostwatch kind of veers towards that as well, a little bit as well. So, you know, you're talking pre-Paranormal Activity, pre-Blair Witch as well. So Ghostwatch's legacy in the horror genre is massive. And for anybody who hasn't seen it, you have to see it just to understand it. As I said, you'll probably watch it and go, oh, it feels a little bit tame by today's standards. Trust me, it's not. Not by towards the end.
Definitely not.
Not towards the end. Yeah.
Make you see Michael Parkinson, then he's Cabbage Clock and Free Parker Pen in a whole new light.
It will make you see Michael Parkinson in a new light. It will make you see Craig Charles in a new light. Sarah Green as well. All of these people, you'll think, that's fine. It's fine. They're perfectly fine. They're safe presenters. They wouldn't dare dupe us into something like that. And they did.
Yeah.
And there was, I don't know, thousands, hundreds of thousands of complaints about this program.
Amazing.
And, you know, you can see why you watch it now. But I genuinely still think it is one of the scariest things ever. And if you speak to anybody about it who watched it that night, they will tell you the same thing. And you've seen the trailer, but you watched the trailer first thing in the morning.
Yeah, well, I didn't want to watch it and it was dark, did I? I'm never going to get any sleep.
But I said to you last week, you would not handle this. And I am being genuine. Yeah. I know you don't like your horror, but you watch the trailer. Do you think you'd be able to do it?
I do actually quite like ghosty things, but I don't know about this. This looks a bit too real.
Yeah.
In a drama setting, you go, it's all right, so it's just a film. You can comfort yourself afterwards by going, it's okay, it's just a film. See something like that, and he's like, oh, I don't know.
But you see, that's the beauty of it, is that the majority of it was filmed inside this standard terraced house that, you know, majority of us probably live in. So we could literally see ourselves living in that house.
Yeah.
And you know,
playing
possibly
the same board games
in it.
And stuff.
Playing the same board games, experiencing the same knocks, you know, all of those things. And that's the beauty of this, is that it tapped into the reality of not just 1992, but now, in the fact that people are still living like this, and it could happen to any of us.
Ooh. There's a sobering thought.
It is.
Well, this is out of DVD now. Blu-ray.
So for the first time ever, it's on Blu-ray. It's for the first time ever on Blu-ray. There was a DVD released maybe about 15 years ago. This one now on Blu-ray.
Watch it with all the lights on. Make sure there is no power cuts.
It won't matter. It won't matter. It doesn't matter. I told you, I was 12. I watched it with a group of my friends. We had the lights on. It didn't matter.
still didn't sleep for weeks.
Still didn't sleep. Absolutely.
Book a day off. That's what you have to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So this is on Blu-ray from Monday the 31st. Perfect.
Oh, as if by design. Brilliant.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
What else you got for us, Buck?
So we've had one animation, which was stop motion, and I've gone for another animation. This is a film called The Spine of Night, and it's set in a land of magic where heroes from different eras and cultures battle against a malevolent force. Oh. So, not so much horror, I've got to be honest here. This is a very adult animated feature of mythical storytelling featuring characters from different walks of life. I mean, it sounds like one of the most innovative ideas for a feature film in many years. And to a certain degree, it is. But if you've seen any Ralph Bakshi films from back in the day, or grew up on any ultra-violent anime movies, then this is going to seem very tame in comparison. I mean, granted, it isn't tame in its relentless violence, but it all feels a bit dated and without any real merit. And I think part of the issue is that because the heroes are from all different time eras and cultures, you don't get long enough with them to fully decide if they're actually protagonists of the story or if they're likely to become an antagonist. And, you know, to my mind, nearly everybody in this film was an antagonist. I didn't root for anybody, really. I mean, early on, I was rooting for the female against the man with the powers, but that was mainly to do with the fact that she had no clothes on and he was fully dressed.
Oh, you know, classic horror.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And I'm like, you know what? That's another annoying thing about this movie is that most of the women are in near state or fully state of undress, whereas the men have all fine, thick garments, keeping them warm in the snow-covered wastelands.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I'm sat there and I'm thinking, look, this is
no one in horror film give a coat away.
Yeah, but I was just thinking, this is more than a touch misogynistic and sexist.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, there are stories later on that focus around the powerful women, but by then I felt like the goodwill is long gone because the filmmakers wanted to have naked women at the start for what I can probably only guess, and this is my guess, is for a bit of titillation. That's the only thing I can guess.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And that's not what we're looking for nowadays.
Bit of an
odd
thing.
Really not.
Yeah, yeah.
The animation as well, I didn't find it that striking. It feels very much ripped from other adult animators. As I said earlier, Ralph Bakshi. If you've seen any Bakshi movies in the past, Lord of the Rings, Fritz the Cat, I'm trying to think what else, Wizards. If you've seen those, then you'll be like, well, this is just a poor man's Ralph Bakshi. The voice cast is all over the place. I mean, some big names in this cast as well.
Yeah.
You know, Richard E. Grant's in there, Lucy Lawless, Patton Oswalt, Joe Manganiello. I'm like, yes, fantastic. But none of them fit their characters. I mean, Patton Oswalt, it's just so out of sync with what the character looks and feels like for his voice. it's hideously standing out where you go, it doesn't fit. That's the wrong person.
Just in the trailer, I'm not sure exactly whose voice it was, but I heard a voice doing one of the characters and thought, that sounds odd.
Yeah.
In just a minute and a half.
Yeah, exactly. But that's the whole movie, really. I think you've hit the nail on the head there by saying it feels odd just in the trailer. When you see the entire film, most of it feels odd. That's the weird thing. I mean, I genuinely can't get over how badly this film misfires. That's the thing. And the worst thing about it is that after about 30 minutes, it becomes a real slog to get through because most of it, the fantasy magic element of it, is so bamboozling. You know, if this film had come out 30 or 40 years ago, then it might have stood a chance. Now, I just think it looks and feels really dated. Really dated.
Yeah. Is this? I wonder if it could be one of the projects where, obviously, the animation takes ages, the imagination of the story is a lot involved. It's just, has it taken a long time to get to us? In that,
I don't know.
Is dated?
It's a good question. I mean, it's not taken 30 years, certainly not, but maybe a couple of years. It just, it's one of those movies that I think just gets everything not wrong, but
misses all the beats.
Not right either. That's the thing. Yeah. You know, you'd watch it and you go, "Oh, this is not the right fit. It should have been something else." Basically, you know, something like that. That's the thing. So I was really excited when I saw the trailer for this initially. I mean, I saw the trailer for this about the start of the year. And then I finally got around to seeing it. I was so disappointed. I really was so disappointed with it.
So where's this out?
So this is on DVD and Blu-ray. So, you know, another animated movie on the highest possible way you can see it on Blu-ray as well. I mean, as I said, if you're into these adult animated movies, then maybe it's worth a look. I mean, you know, even then, I mean, I've seen a lot of films that we'd mentioned.
Yeah.
And I came away from this going, it just feels dated and it feels like it's hideously ripping off all of the others as well.
So The Spine of the Night kind of got your back up a bit.
Yeah, it did. It did. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So obviously these are all very scary Halloween films. If you want something a little less terrifying, so if you haven't got enough cushions to go around, for example, is there something a little less terrifying?
So, I mean, we could listen. Do you want me to just recommend a movie that isn't a horror movie? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, yeah. So I can watch without.
Okay, right,
so
fine.
I can still sleep at night.
That's fine. Okay, in which case. Out on DVD and Blu-ray this week is a film called Brian and Charles. It's a low-budget British movie about a gentleman called Brian who is completely isolated where he lives up in the north of England. He decides to build a robot from parts lying around in his garage.
Oh, what a legend. I like it.
I know this sounds bizarre, but honestly, this is a genuine delight of a movie. It's just so heartwarming and slightly weird as well. So Brian is played by David Earle, who I think a lot of people will know from appearing in several Ricky Gervais projects. He plays like the weirdo, the guy with the beard and like the hair pushed forward and whatever else. You'll know him when you see him.
Yeah, classic look. Bit iconic.
Yeah, yeah. He's just wonderful. And it's funny as well. And the way that Brian jokes with Charles as well. And Charles is the robot who... has a mannequin head and his body is a washing machine, and then he's got mannequin legs, but he comes to life. And the way that they're watching TV together and Charles sees somebody in a grass skirt and he says to Brian, "Where is that from?" And Brian replies, "They're from Honolulu." And Charles replies by saying, "Hopalulu, Hopalulu." And like genuinely funny. I mean, there is a sort of vague story here, one about locals trying to steal Charles away from Brian and trying to burn him on a bonfire. I mean, it's perfectly fine. You know, there's nothing wrong with it. The problem is it takes the time away from Brian and or Charles. I mean, quite frankly, I could have watched 90 minutes of just Brian and Charles sat about doing their daily lives, really. It was so much fun. Yeah. This is a pure joy from start to finish. It's a movie about friendship, the most bizarre of friendships as well. It just makes you feel warm and fuzzy inside. Obviously, unless you've got a washing machine for a tummy, in which case...
Yeah, you might feel a little...
You might feel a bit wet inside, maybe. I don't know. But genuinely, this is a wonderful movie, an absolutely wonderful movie. It's not a horror movie at all. It is a movie about friendship, and I think everybody will fall in love with Charles and laugh at him. And laugh at Brian, because Brian's a funny guy. You know, there's a bit in it where he tries to romance somebody and it just goes horribly wrong. It's really awkward. And it was funny. And then he tried to explain it to Charles. It just really lovely. Really lovely, this film.
Brilliant. So Brian and Charles, where's this out?
So Brian and Charles on DVD and Blu-ray now.
Oh, excellent. And it'll make you see your washing machine very slightly differently by the look of the trailer. Get any ideas?
You're using that. If you're an inventor. Exactly. Somebody throws a washing machine out, suddenly we're overrun with Charles's.
Lovely stuff. Well, there's loads to get our teeth into there, Mark. A few tricks and a few treats thrown in for good measure.
Yes.
Lovely. Yes. I hope you have a wonderful Halloween. And
well, I'll try, but you know, I'm still thinking about. I'm still thinking about Ghostwatch, I was about to say the name then, but I won't because, as I said, it not only will it scare me, but it will scare an entire generation if I say the person's name, the ghost's name.
The ghost's name.
What they've christened it.
Don't do it.
I'm not going to.
Us in the studio here. There's been rumours. Excellent. What have you got for us next week, Mark?
So next week, we're going to be talking about a film called Watcher, which is set in Bucharest and stars Maker Monroe, who's done quite a few horror films in the past, actually. We're also going to be looking at the new Jennifer Lawrence movie called Causeway, which will be on Apple TV. And then on the podcast, we're going to be talking about a brand new film from Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead, two of my favourite directors working in the sci-fi genre. This one's called Something in the Dirt. And bizarrely, get this, it's all about a haunted house.
Oh, okay. Sci-fi haunted house.
Yes.
We're going to need, I don't know, laser guns.
We're going to need laser guns and we're going to need cushions to hide behind.
Laser cushions. That's what we need.
Film reviews and movie news with Stuart Pink and Mark Searby.